appreciate your attention, and I'm happy to entertain any questions you might have on this particular segment of the order.
Thank you, Diane. We'll now entertain questions if anybody has a question. So George, I'm gonna unmute you. We should be able to hear you here in a second here. I think you're good to go.
Hello, am I?
Yes. Yep, thanks, George, we can hear you.
Okay, I guess, are you gonna go over the equation, the two equations, the pathway, compliance pathways, or is this the time to ask questions regarding those?
Sure. I mean, yes. So I can definitely talk about the two different pathways. The one pathway for complying with the targets and limits for nitrogen discharge is to essentially look at all of the limits that we have included on our table of the targets and limits. And by looking at all of the nitrogen that's applied and all of the nitrogen removed from your particular ranch, whatever is left over, that is what has to meet those, to satisfy those targets and limits. And as far as all of the components of the nitrogen applied, that would refer to nitrogen that's applied via fertilizer, nitrogen that's applied via compost, and nitrogen applied in the irrigation water that's applied to the ranch. As far as the nitrogen removed goes, that incorporates nitrogen that's removed from harvest of the crop, nitrogen that's removed from sequestration in any woody portions of particular crops, as well as nitrogen that's removed through some sort of a treatment method. And then there may be other innovative ways that growers and third parties can come up with for removal of nitrogen from their ranch. So the other the compliance pathway is to address situations where there is a particular ranch, a particular grower who has high nitrogen concentrations in their irrigation water. In those instances, the way we're hoping that you will comply with the targets and limits is to essentially not include that irrigation water concentration in your calculation, but rather to just balance fertilizer applied nitrogen with the nitrogen that's removed from all of the means that you have at your disposal to remove the nitrogen from your ranch. So two compliance pathways. One of them, it deals with all of the components of applied minus removed, and the other accounts for nitrogen that is already present in the groundwater.
So basically, this compliance pathway too seems to be a real monumental shift. I've never seen anything like this that encourages the use of existing nitrate in groundwater. Is that correct? I mean, this is a monumental shift as I see it. I was just wondering when this occurred and if you could explain the difference in thought process that has evidently occurred at some point. I just wasn't aware of this until this presentation.
Okay. I'm going to ask Monica to weigh in on this because she has been involved over a number of years in the development of our requirements for this particular segment of the order. So Monica, if you wouldn't mind helping out with this one, that would be great.
Hi, good morning, George and everyone.
Good morning.
Yeah, we did realize at some point when we were basically evaluating the nitrogen applied with the nitrogen removed from all the information in the TNA reports that some of the ranches have a high nitrogen concentration, like your case, and it would be very challenging or perhaps impossible in some cases to meet the targets. That's why we realized that we needed to develop a compliance number two in this case. We call it compliance pathway two. Plus, we received many, many feedback from growers like you telling us the case and the issues with the irrigation water in general. So that's why we developed this pathway number two, to encourage the use of nitrogen in the irrigation water and to make sure growers are able to meet the limits. So okay. In the development of the order.
Okay, that was great. I just want to commend you on that. And I think that's the best thing I've seen in 10 years. So anyway,
okay.
Another question on the removal aspect. The big thing that all growers are going to be focusing on is the harvest, obviously, because that's really the only thing that I see that makes economic sense. And we see growers typically see nitrate as a fuel, or it takes energy to produce it. So it's better to use it on applied crops so that you're, contributing to, or not contributing to global warming. You're taking advantage of basically a stored energy. So in that, just as my philosophy, I think this is all going to work out really well. But at the end of the day, we need to know how much in each of these six crops, what that number is relative to the concentration per pound of harvested product. So I think you mentioned something briefly that you thought it was like 31 pounds an acre or something to that effect. Or what is the, have you run the numbers on each of these crops? And if you could have those, it would, I think we need to know those going in before we can make any kind of decisions, right?
So are you referring to the removal coefficient aspect of the order, for instance, for what's removed through harvest?
Yes, the removal from harvest. If I say harvest 100 pounds of product, what does that generally translate into pounds of nitrate or nitrogen?
Right. Yes. Okay. So in order to be able to make that conversion, you'll have to be considering these nitrogen removal conversion coefficients. And there have been a number of them that are actually included on table MRP-1 of the order. And those removal coefficients have come from, Central Coast region specific research that has been done, as well as information in the literature. And I know, Monica, perhaps you can say a bit more here related to some recent efforts to determine even more removal coefficients for additional crops in the region.
Hey, George, I believe what you're asking is how to make the conversion. So basically, you will be required to know the harvest amount in pounds. We will provide the conversion coefficients for many crops, and you just got to make a multiplication there. And it's all going to be automatically done in a form that we are going to develop and provide to the growers in GeoTracker. So you will have to know the harvest in pounds. The coefficient will be available for many crops, and then you will have your conversion in pounds of nitrogen. That will be automatically calculated. So we have information, and I believe it's a table in the MRP of, I don't know if it's about 30 crops. So potentially you grow most of them, and so you will have all the coefficients you need. You will also be able to work with your own laboratory if you want to establish your own specific coefficient for your area, your ranch, and your varieties, let's say. And so basically you have two options. Use the coefficients that have been developed, or develop your own with a laboratory. Is that answering all your questions, George?
Well, I just wondered why these coefficients were not included in our discussion today, because that's kind of a big deal, right?
Right.
Right. I mean, in terms of what it is, the information that you have to report, yes, it's a major component. And for this particular part of the presentations that you're going to be hearing today, there's so much information associated with the groundwater protection part of the order that we were trying to kind of keep it at a kind of an overview level, and hoping that you know, through your questions, we can get to this more specific information. So I'm glad you asked these questions.
Yeah, thanks. We are going to have to move on. We have a couple of the people with their hands raised, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the questions in about 15 minutes for these five presentations, and that'll get us through the 2.5 hours. But George, really great questions. Thanks a lot. Yeah, and as Diane said, we're trying to maintain a high level here, so just give people an idea what they want to comment on in the order. And then when the order is finally adopted, then we're going to have some time, frankly, where staff are going to be doing workshops and getting into the nitty gritty about some of the things you're talking about.
If I get those for tomorrow, because I might be on tomorrow's too.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good. Okay, Gene, I'm going to unmute you. And then after Gene, Willie.
Okay.
Hey, Gene.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, great. Thanks. So, yeah, actually, my question was about the compliance pathway, too. And so I appreciated George's questions because that clarified things for me a little bit. But I guess I'm still a little confused. Well, I guess my first question is, do you anticipate that the majority of growers will choose pathway 2 over pathway 1? Or do you have any particular expectations about which pathway be more common? And then I guess the second part of that question is just, I understand your rationale for including pathway 2 as an alternative to those growers that might have trouble meeting the limits in compliance pathway 2. But I guess it almost seems like compliance pathway 2 sort of undercuts your goals of reducing nitrogen discharge, because conceivably, you know, a grower could have extremely high nitrogen concentrations in their irrigation water, but yet still apply relatively high levels of fertilizer. I guess it doesn't seem like there's any compensatory factor in the fertilization value. I guess I'm just trying to understand how that works.
Okay, so with respect to the compliance pathway number 2, what we're kind of looking at that as an incentive for growers to use their irrigation water. So that means they would have to know what their nitrogen concentration in their irrigation water is through, you know, specific testing. Once they know that, then the idea would be they would then not apply a significant additional amount of fertilizer on the ground surface. But whatever they do apply still has to be balanced against what can be removed. So the way we would check for compliance to see if that's actually happening is on the reporting forms that we will be developing. We will have a grower indicate which of the compliance pathways that they intend to use for compliance. We will do the calculations to compare then, first of all, what is their nitrogen concentration in their groundwater, and then look to see if there is a balance between what they are reporting the nitrogen removed through, nitrogen applied from the fertilizer is compared against the nitrogen that's removed from all of their different removal mm-hmm. options they employ. So we will be looking for at compliance to see if there's that balance.
Okay.
Does that help?
Can I interject for just a moment? Thanks, Gene. This is Chris. And I want to think when your questions are, do we expect the growers will choose pathway number 2? It really depends on their irrigation water nitrogen concentration. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in a situation where you can utilize that nitrogen and it's a pretty consistent thing and you can rely on it, you can grow a crop, then we expect people are going to do it, right? It kind of depends on your irrigation water situation. And then with respect to number 2 question, it seems like pathway under 2 undercuts our goal for reducing nitrogen discharge. Actually not. If you consider that if you're utilizing the nitrogen that's in the groundwater, that's really the whole pump and fertilize concept, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a great thing. You know, if people are incentivized to use that nitrogen that's already in the groundwater, then that is a net reduction in the nitrogen that's in the groundwater basin.
Okay. Yeah. And I apologize. I think undercut was probably a strong word, but I guess I was just trying to understand if there was an incentive for reducing the use of fertilizer kind of built into that equation because the nitrate is, you know, coming from the irrigation water instead.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, of course, the nitrogen that's in your well water is free, you know,
right.
except for, you know, pumping charges, of course. And that's one factor. And of course, you know, growers are stewards of the land, and you know, nobody wants to have contaminated groundwater, right?
Right.
That's the other thing. And then quite frankly, you know, the targets and the limits prod people on and make sure that we all do what we can to be as efficient as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Willie, I'm going to unmute you. Okay, you should be good to go, Willie.
Thanks, Chris. So I think it's fantastic taking advantage of this testing effort to add in the 1,2,3 TCP, a really creepy carcinogen. Are you guys going to seek any funding to help cover that cost? I mean, that was Dow, that was Shell cheating and lying and screwing all of us, and we don't want to feel that again. So it's just a rhetorical question. Can you guys seek funding to help? You guys are well connected with Sacramento better than us.
Well, at this point in time, we haven't really pursued that idea. I mentioned yesterday, Willie, if you were on, the charge from some labs that I had looked into in terms of what it would cost to do that analysis would be somewhere between $50 and $100 for a sample. And so we're asking for that to be done one time per year. And after we get information throughout our region of, you know, where we are seeing the 1,2,3 TCP versus where we're not, we will be able to, I think, cut back on this requirement, hopefully, because we hopefully won't be seeing it all over the place. We'll be able to cut back and just have a requirement for certain growers where it's already been the presence is known, and those will be the places where we're looking at continued monitoring for 1,2,3 TCP. With respect to funding to help finance that, at this point we don't have anything that we can tell you on that, but it's something that we can look into.
Okay, it is 9:58, so we've about 10 o'clock here. So we're going to move on to the next presentation.